Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cohen.
And you're listening to the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast, twice weekly, stab ground cloth with thread and needle type thing.
Sometimes we make fine art. You know, sometimes.
It has happened.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I owe one to Stephanie Webb of Lindy Stitches.
Okay.
Felt pretty bad about this last week, because last week we talked about it with Vanna, her new Stars Bright design.
Yes.
And beautiful. Brought that up, and I really like it, and blah, blah, blah. Just wanted to give a little plug to Stephanie, because I like Stephanie, I like her designs, and so I was just throwing in a little something for her there. And then I asked her to send a photo, and completely forgot to put it in the FlossTube video, forgot to put it on the web page, everything. Completely.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, Stephanie, send something I won't use. Yeah. So right out of the gate, go check out Stephanie Webb's new Stars Bright design. Really like her design. Not to mention her rabbit. Still liking the rabbit design from the Nashville show at Lindy Stitches. I'll put a picture up. It'll be in the FlossTube video. First picture in the FlossTube video. The whole shoot and match. Go check it out. Stephanie does good work.
Remember this time.
Yes. I'm remembering. Guilt is upon me.
Really, it's a beautiful design. You should definitely go check it out. Absolutely.
Yep. Got everything done, all posted, everything. Oh, geez, you forgot. How could you forget that? I literally wrote her an email and said, please send so I can use it. So go check it out. Lindy Stitches, Stephanie does good work. Nice designs, a lot of nice designs. So go check it out. Speaking of that kind of thing, 2 years for Works by ABC, that is not possible.
Yeah, well, it's hard for me to believe it myself, but yes, May 19th is like the official launch date of my Etsy store. So yeah, more or less this time of May is my anniversary date.
And that's amazing. I would have said a year if anybody had asked me. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, so it was a year ago that I was having the first New Jersey FlossTube retreat, and that was not purposely timed at all. Like, I had to, like, look it up when the thought occurred to me, or I think someone even suggested to me, hey, is this around the time you started your Etsy store? I had to look it up, and it turned out that the New Jersey retreat that I had last year was the very week, like, the one-year anniversary weekend of working at ABC. So that was by chance. So yes, so that makes right now, or coming up this weekend, officially my 2 year anniversary. And it's super cool. I never would have thought. I can't say I hoped. I just, when I latched onto this idea 2 years ago, it was over 2 years ago. This is the 2 year anniversary of starting, like officially putting it out there. Hey, people, I've opened an Etsy store. Are you interested in my designs? I loved what I was doing. I've been designing some of my own things for some period of time, and it kind of never occurred to me that there would be others that might be interested in what I was doing. And I will give full credit to FlossTube, to opening my eyes to the larger stitching community, to saying, hey, there might be some people who would be interested, and giving me enough, I'm going to say it, courage to give it a try. And realizing when I was, and I will say, every day is a learning curve, a step in the learning process. Every time I try something new, and I do try to do new things with designs, with the patterns, with the ideas that I'm exploring. It's been a great journey. And, I'm so appreciative of the positive feedback that I've gotten. I'm appreciative of those who've given me helpful ideas and suggestions. I'm so appreciative of those who have, sent me links or sent me pictures or saying, hey, I saw this and I thought of you. And, sometimes those ideas are the ones that I pursue. And I would not, while I loved what I was doing when I started this 2 years ago, I could not have imagined that I would have gotten to the point of things like being out there beyond just my Etsy store. So now, thanks to being through a distributor, you can find me in other LNSs out there, like in stores. I've had friends even in other countries tell me, oh, I saw your patterns in my LNS. That I've designed patterns that have gone into some magazines. The next Just Cross Stitch magazine that will be coming out, which will be, if I've got this right, it's like their paperwork labels it the July, August issue, but the printed copy, I think, just calls it August. And I think it therefore comes out in late June, but I may or may not have all that timing correct, but I think late June, I will have a couple of designs in there, which is super awesome.
Yeah.
So it has just been a wonderful journey. And I put this out there that anyone who's listening that thinks that maybe they want to give this a try, I say go for it. You know, there are now ways, and I'm using Etsy as an example, but it is certainly not the only one, that you can give it a try in a small way. And this is the way I did it. And I've talked to others about who've been interested like I was. And, you know, it's a strong word to say mentored, because all I can do is I'll share what I did. And, you know, you can learn from whatever I can offer to you. There are ways to start small and see if this is something you enjoy doing. And I just encourage people to follow whatever they love. And if you love taking your idea and putting it out there, putting it on paper / computer, and then putting it on fabric, and then you think, huh, I wonder if someone else would like this, you can do it too. You know, give it a try.
Yeah.
It's something I am so grateful to the larger stitching community that I joined as a part of the FlossTube community that really encouraged me, gave me the courage to do this. So
are you a better stitcher, better needle worker as a result of your design efforts?
That's a good question.
Thank you. I work on those very hard. But you know, are you just overall better?
I think about stitching from a slightly different perspective, because I am thinking more now of how could somebody else reproduce this. Whereas before, when I would be stitching something, and again, something that I was designing that was not, you know, just a pattern that I was, a commercial pattern that I was doing, where I might, I don't know, change the colors, but I was in effect using someone else's design. When I was designing something myself, it was just like, oh, I can make that happen. So I'll do it this way or that way. And I didn't have to think about how could I write the instructions for someone else that needs to be reproducing it. Like, for example, here's a great example. Right now I am working on a blackwork pattern that is actually a design that I stitched a number of years ago. And so I'm working backwards. I have the stitched piece. I have some of the graph paper that I used. But some of it, I clearly was changing the stitching as I went. So I never really completely graphed it out. This was paper and pencil, graph paper and pencil. But one of the first things I had to work on was sort of the overall layout. And I'm studying my stitched piece very carefully. And I realized, so most of the stitching on the black work is over, you know, it's on a 32 count fabric and it's over two. Okay. But this design really doesn't work. I'm going to do my best to explain this verbally without having the pictures to show what I'm talking about. This design would not really work for someone who would want to stitch, let's say, on Ada on a 16 count, because there are places in the design where I had to, for a mathematical purpose, get off by one. Like I was stitching over two, and every place I'm always stitching over two. But if I was going, just to put some numbers on it, up at hole one and down at hole three, and then up at hole three and down at hole five, to put numbers on it, okay? There was another place where I needed to go up at hole two and down at hole four.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nowadays, if I were starting with a blank idea for a blackwork pattern, I would not do that. I would rethink from a bigger, larger perspective, how could I get my mathematical, well, I don't know. Now I'm saying this out loud. All right, where I was going was I would not do that because it's so unusual in black work world that I think it might throw somebody off. But that said, what I'm working on this pattern is just writing super clear directions and how I've charted it out in a – I've had to chart it out slightly differently and then write really clear directions. But then I think anyone could do it. It really is totally doable. And I also have the very clear pictures of what I stitched so you could see – and you could see why I did it, what I did. And I can explain why I had to do it. I was trying to reproduce something, a general shape, and it was just the math that worked. So a better, quote your words, a better stitcher? I don't know. What makes somebody a better stitcher? I think doesn't matter, like tension and laying threads and all of that. I think that naturally is always a process of the more you stitch, the more your technique gets better. But certainly thinking about things from a slightly different perspective, particularly how can I make sure this would be clear to somebody else? And some of that is, of course, the teacher side of me that comes through. I just have never really had to do that in my needlework world. And I'm doing that a little bit more now in my needlework world because of my designing.
Yeah, well, better overall, but also more efficient. When you pick up someone else's chart, do you view it in a different way? Do you, based on your own experience designing, find more efficient ways to accomplish the same thing? You know, it just seems like if you do enough of that, it's the old, if you really want to learn something, teach it. And what better way to teach something than to create your own design and write instructions for it? So, you know, do you get better overall as a needleworker for having gone through that exercise several times? It sounds like you do.
Yes, I think you do. Absolutely. And I am lucky that my LNS is a very large one, Needleworker's Delight. And I joke with them that when I go there, yeah, I'm often, you know, maybe picking up some floss or some fabric or something, but really I'm going there for research. You know, I could literally be there for 3 hours and it's not because I'm looking at patterns, deciding what I'm buying. It's because I'm looking at thread colors or I'm looking at fabric. Okay. So when I go to my looking at patterns, it's about how did this designer put their pattern together? What do they use for their, does their key look any different? What do their symbols look like? If they're describing an interesting stitch, how do they show that diagram? Like, that's my research, you know?
Sure.
I love doing that kind of stuff. So, absolutely.
Stronger grasp of color?
I'm getting there. You know, yes, okay. I think stronger, but it's certainly part of what I want. You know, in my ideal world, I would either live at my LNS or I would have my own complete set of all the threads that exist sitting right here so that I could really play with them in person all the time. I mean, I truly think that's what it would take for me to have a better color sense. I love my DMC color card, for example. Love it. But I have thought more than once that I would love to have a – I mean, I more or less have – most, I'm going to say 97% of the DMC colors, but I fully admit my organizational system is lacking. And I either need to like invest the time and the energy to make it a better organizational system so I could really use it, or just, I don't know, like win the lottery and then just buy a whole set that comes completely organized in its own little cabinet and never use that set to stitch with, but just use that set for design purposes. No,
okay.
There was someone at my LNS, a local stitcher, and she was at a retreat once and she won. It was like a raffle prize, a full DMC set that came in like a really nice like case. And I'll tell you, I was so jealous. This was not a retreat I was at. I wasn't there, but I heard the story afterwards and I'm thinking, oh my God, she's just using that to stitch with. I could use that for like all kinds of things. So yeah. Yeah. That, so the, that's that I would love to, I would love to acquire full color, full sets of threads of certainly full organized and laid out the whole nine yards of, and not just DMC, some of my other favorite thread lines that I think would really help improve that aspect of my designing. And who knows, you know, down the line, that I know that would be a great investment. We need to get to that point is what it boils down to.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Hey, and speaking of threads, Vaughn and I were talking about the sulky threads.
And yes.
You have one spool.
Well, and I will tell you the story of that one spool. And you know what? I was trying to trace it back. I didn't actually go back and watch like all my floss tubes, but I really think this was also right around 2 years ago, like right around when I first came out with my first set of patterns. And I can trace the story of why, but simply put, in my early time, and so it was also about 2 years ago, a little bit longer than 2 years ago, that I started floss tube. And at that time there was a, one pattern that was, a lot of people were stitching, was called Coffee Quaker. And it said, first I drink the coffee, then I do the things. And there was a time that there was a floss tuber, I'm pretty sure it was Minnie Gray, all X's. She had bought the pattern and she held it up and she said, yes, I drank the Kool-Aid, I bought this pattern. And that phrase, I drank the Kool-Aid, just stuck with me because, I mean, she was indicating, yeah, I'm doing what everyone else is doing. Around that same time, a lot of people, and so this is 2 years ago, a lot of people had started discovering that sulky, and so it really was that long ago that sulky first started, I guess you'd say advertising, promoting their 12 weight thread is the equivalent of two strands of DMC. That's what they promote. And we're going to talk in a moment of whether or not we agree with that. And so you could find a number of floss tubers as well as on some Facebook groups, people who tried it out, people who went on Amazon as well as other sites and bought like six packs of there are a few collections that came in six packs. They have both solids as well as variegated threads that they call blendables. And I was certainly intrigued, but I the easily accessible, purchasable six pack, and I remember looking at that time and could not find anywhere you could buy just a single spool. And the six packs, like for me at that time, like I would need to like at least three or four of the colors for me to justify buying the six pack. And I couldn't, there were none of them that I liked. And there were only maybe two or three that were options. Well, there was a point. And so you go on the Sulky website, you can find places, stores that sell it. And it's a lot of quilting stores because they sell a lot of different types of threads, not just this all cotton, 100% cotton thread. I was going to be somewhere, you know, some hour and a half away, but I happened to notice there was a quilting store, and it was more than a quilting store. It was like, you know, one of those like sewing machine dealer stores. Well, it turned out, so I decided to go there, and it turned out to be a great choice because they had the full line of silky all cotton threads, but they only have the large spools. So not the small spools that come with that advertising promotion, because that advertising promotion is for a 50 yard, don't quote me, 50 yards or 50 meters, forget which it is, which is more reasonable for a cross stitcher purchase. What this is, it's in my hands as we speak, is 300 meters. So I guess the other one must have been 50 meters. So the larger size spools that you would expect to find, you know, like for quilters. But from there, I could see the full selection. And actually, there were more options that are available in the large spools. I guess Sulky must have just started making the smaller spools. And so I picked out one color that just, one of the variegated, what they call blendables, that just so appealed to me. It's interesting. So I know there's a floss tube, and I'm pretty sure it was the floss tube that I actually introduced. I have an Etsy store, and here are my first patterns, because I, in one of my first set of patterns, I had used this thread. And I know that I know I've said the phrase, I drank the Kool-Aid, I bought some sulky thread. So that's how I can date all of this, because I drank the Kool-Aid at the time. But I didn't drink the Kool-Aid like everyone else was buying their six packs off of Amazon. I went to a store and bought some. At the time, I stitched it on a 36 count over two, because I remember some other people saying that they didn't like the coverage of 32 over two. And I can vaguely remember trying it and vaguely remember agreeing with what was said. And so here's where you have to get the visual in your head. If you are stitching with two strands of DMC or whatever floss, and you are making sure those two strands don't like twist upon each other, they're basically, whether you lay them or railroad them or just make sure they lay next to each other in some sort of non-twisted way, you get a bit of a width to it. But this is one strand that is thicker than one strand of DMC, but you don't get the width that you get when you have two strands of DMC. You get one round strand.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
So at the time, and I'm pretty sure I did not just believe what people were saying, I'm pretty sure I did have a scrap of 32 somewhere and test it out and sort of decided for myself, I'm not crazy about the coverage, because I know the piece that I started at that time was a over 36 over two. And I remember saying on that video, and I really like this coverage. Well, given that you and Vanna were talking about sulky last week, and I had a reason to need to stitch up a small little something and really had no vision of what color or what fabric, I said, you know what, I'm going to pull out some 32 count and I'm going to pull out that 12 weight thread and stitch it up. And you know what? I was really happy with the coverage. Now, granted, I was not stitching a full coverage little thing. It was sort of a little open air, open geometric little symmetrical square. But I think it looked really nice. So yes, I own precisely one spool of it. I own the large size spool, but I will fully admit that after I sent you that picture, I was on the Sulky website and I was looking at the other, and I particularly liked the way the variegation worked in this. It was, and again, there's some other of the variegated threads that of their blendables that seem to be too harsh in the variegation, like it like the colors, you know, when you include colors that are too, I don't know, the one I'm stitching with is both blues and violets, like it doesn't strain too much from that part of the color wheel. There are other blendables that really bounce around on the color wheel. I don't know how those would stitch up, but this stitched up very nicely on 32 count. I have not tried it on 28. I would imagine the coverage would not be that good, but it might be perfectly right for what the look you might want for whatever you're stitching on. But there you go. And if you go on the Sulky website, you can see, and you know, you look for these all 100% cotton thread. You can see which ones are available in the 50 meter spool and which ones are only available in the 300 meter spool.
When you stitch with it, does it give the pearl cotton look and feel, or is it more as if I stitched with DMC regular floss? You know that that difference, I mean, is a distinct visual difference.
Because of like the sheen of pearl.
No,
cotton?
because you're stitching with one round thread. You know, does it lay fairly flat, or does it give that round, like a cornrow type look that you get with pearl?
I'm looking at it right now.
I'm not sure I'm describing it right, but
yeah, I guess this is my thinking though, is that when you're stitching with pearl, you're inevitably stitching larger, and so you're going to see larger.
Yes.
Whereas this is smaller. And so, like, I'm even looking under my magnifier right now to decide what I think. And no, I mean, I almost think how different would this look if I were just stitching with one strand of DMC, other than this is 32 count, it would be a little, you know, not very good coverage. But it basically looks like one strand of something like DMC. It doesn't really have the quote look of pearl cotton that I'm used to when I stitch with pearl cotton. That said, when you stitch with pearl cotton, you're usually stitching something larger, and so you see more of the twists, I guess.
Right,
not twists.
Right.
What is it?
You know. Well, the twist. Yeah. The each stitch is better defined just because of the nature of the thread. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just trying to get a sense of it. And obviously, when I get to Sassy Jack's at the end of the month, I'll be purchasing a couple spools because I got to play with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's something interesting and neat to play with and see what you think of it. And like I said, there's solids as well as these blendables, which is to say they're variegated threads. And I wonder how their solids. I forget the numbers of how many different ones they have, number wise, you know, how easily you could match up colors to how color range. You know, if you have some monochrome design, but you need four shades of DMC to make it work, is there four shades of a sulky to do, you know, what are the limitations or what is it? I haven't really looked into it, but in terms of just a thread on fabric, it's well worth playing with. Absolutely.
The variegation, is it gradual, or are they fairly abrupt color changes?
The color that I have is, I would say it's gradual, but it's there isn't much variegation, but I know there's but there is. All right, so I would say it's gradual. It's not the abrupt, not at all the abrupt color changes that we've talked about with some of those DMC
right
ones. So no,
okay.
These don't. But again, when I was looking on the website, and I was like, I'm kind of curious. I don't know, curious enough to buy, but curious because I don't know if it came in the 50 meter spool. There is a thread that is black and white. Like, talk about the ultimate of variegation there.
Oh,
there's one. One of their, and you could picture for a quilter how that there might be some interesting, you know, imagine like a red quilt and you are using a black and white thread to do some, that would be really interesting.
Yes.
What kind of jumps of variegation does it have or not have? You know what I mean? So it would be interesting so that's an example of one that the main colors, black and white, are the extremes of what's going on. What I have in the spool in front of me is blues, like it goes from a like indigo blue to a medium blue to a lilac and then back again. There's not much change at all. So it's a nice subtle variegation, but
okay.
I think that's because of this particular color that I have. I'm now even all the more curious what other colors would produce.
Yeah. Well, I just, and you know, it's one set of threads. So, you know, to focus on it like it's the end of the world is hardly worth the trouble, but it just intrigues me because if it behaves close enough to DMC, and literally covers as well as two strands, you know, it opens some doors in stitching that allow you to stitch on lower count linens, for example, and not have to deal with two strands. But then, you know, then the other question I have for you is if I stitch with two strands, I'm pretty conscious of railroading or using Bonna's method by bringing the eye of the needle up, whatever it is to make those two strands lay flat. Yet when I watch floss tubes, I see a lot of stitchers using two strands and not even worrying about that. And not, you know, not even, I mean, they just clearly don't even care. And, you know, I don't know if sometimes that's just me or I mean, is that, do you pay attention when you stitch with two strands?
I do. I will more often than not railroad. I have noticed more and more in recent time period that I will do things to avoid stitching with two strands.
Well, that's what I do. That's exactly what I do. Yes.
But yes, no, I do railroad. For me, I think that has become a factor of that I have over time entered pieces in judged situations. And it's not that I've ever gotten feedback from judges that has said anything. It's just that I have in ways sought out how do you, which is probably the same as you, how do you make your stitching look as good as it can? And from that came learning about the idea of laying stitches, like in canvas work, laying stitches, and then the various equivalents in cross stitch world. You don't have to lay the stitches. You have other ways to make them lay nicely. So that's my take on it. That said, there have been some situations where I have been stitching something that was in no way going to be going toward a competition or anything where anyone was really going to study it carefully, shall we say. And I am fully aware that I will stitch quicker if I don't have to bother with that little extra movement of railroading, and I don't.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's the judgment call I make, you know?
Right. Well, yeah. And when you're stitching a model or something, you just simply want it done for a good picture. And so, yeah, I wouldn't waste my time on that either. But otherwise, yes, I would go to the trouble. And so, exactly. That's so I go to 40 count. So I only have to use one strand because I don't want to deal with it. I'd rather deal with 40 count, which doesn't bother me, but I'd rather deal with that than deal with railroading or anything else. Loop starting and threading two strands or, you know, all the things that go with that. I'll pass. I'll just go to 40 count and eliminate the problem. So
now say that, like, right now I am stitching a project on 36 count using only one strand, and I'm pretty happy with the coverage. Now, it seems like 36 is often that spot where
right.
stitchers have very specific opinions about what they like, but I've been pretty happy with 36, one strand on 36 count. So that has been a count that I use to avoid the whole two strand.
Yeah. That 36 seems to be that junction in the road where it can go either way, depending on your tension, depending on how you like it or don't like it. And so for me, just go to 40 and be done with it. But yeah, every time 35, 36, whatever comes up, that's almost invariably the question, one or two strands. And then the stringer response is about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one or the other. Yeah. But see, I was, you know, working on Sarah Brazier, and there's several places where there's a little bit of satin stitching, and I'm on 40 count with Soie d'Alger, and using one strand, and under the magnifier, I thought the satin stitching looks just a little sparse. I'm not sure I like it. Maybe I need to do two strands.
Okay.
And so, as a matter of fact, last night I went to bed convinced I was going to cut out and go to two strands on all the satin stitching. But then in the middle of the night, as so often happens, it hit me, wait a minute, you're looking at this under that big magnifying glass. You better look at it without the magnifier from, you know, say an arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did this morning, then I thought, no, I'm not going back and tearing all that out, because what looks somewhat sparse under the magnifier looks just fine. Actually looks nice and filled with, just to the naked eye. And like, sometimes in there, if there's a really thick thread of linen that'll create a visible gap in the satin stitching, then I'll pierce that thread of linen and put an extra strand in just to fill that gap. But, you know how you get so wrapped up in what's going on under that magnifier that you forget that no one will ever see it under the magnifier, and that you really need to look at it the way a normal person would look at it to see how it's going to finish up. And so I just decided to keep going as I was.
Can I just say that was a very good call, Gary? There was no reason to cut out your satin stitches and redo them. So, yes, good call.
Yeah, well,
But
it you know, if I'm going to make something as huge and beautiful as Sarah Brazier, I don't want to always feel like, oh, I wish I had.
sure, and I completely understand that. I get that. I do. But I feel like that this question about the satin stitches and one strand, two strands, so on, has come up on the Facebook group. Like, haven't, or maybe you, it just because it came up for you just recently, you haven't actually looked
No,
recently,
I have. I have
but
looked. Yes, it comes up often. Yes.
and what are people doing in terms of, like, are there people that are doing them with two strands? Are there people that are saying, oh my gosh, no one will ever look that closely, it looks fine. What's is there any consensus involved, or is that just a silly idea?
It's a group of stitchers, and you're wanting consensus. Okay.
Believe me. Believe
No,
me.
it's a mixed bag, and it really hovers around that 36 count from what I could see, but most people were using one strand at 40 and higher, and that's what made me then realize, wait a minute, I need to look at it, 'cause then I looked at people who had finished Sarah Brazier and blew up the pictures as big as they'd hold, and I thought, man, that looks pretty good. I need to take a look at mine. And then I thought, wait a minute, I need to take a look at mine without the magnifier. And yeah, and now I'm just comfortable with it now. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a judgment call. And I was perfectly willing to take out all the satin stitching and redo it with two strands, willing to do it. I noticed one person, there's in the top center, there's this a tree that has balls on it. I don't know if it's supposed to be a Christmas tree with ornaments or what it's supposed to be, but the balls are all satin stitched. And in looking at it, one person who had finished Sarah Brazier did road stitches for those. And I thought that was brilliant. Yeah, so they got a little raise, a little texture, and a road stitch, but then also eliminated any question about whether satin stitching mattered. And I thought that was pretty excellent move there. And then that person also, in some of the border flowers that are satin stitched, had simply cross-stitched them in. And because I've been kind of debating on those, they look really nice satin stitched, but again, I wondered how if they were too sparse. And then this person had, and some of them had just simply done a cross stitch and filled them in. And that also looked very nice too. So, but it was an example of you don't have to stitch what's on the chart. You can change and do what appeals to you. And and actually there's that double border that runs around that's filled with satin stitch. And in needlepoint, you don't do a lot. You do some straight satin stitch, but you have to be careful because it'll look really gappy. And so it's, and of course, any side by side stitching that's at an angle covers so much better anyway. And I've thought about doing that double border at a one off slant just to see. And I might experiment with that just to see if it looks how it looks, and and make the slants go toward each of the corners and just play with it a little bit.
Is it charted to be straight?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And it looks really good that way. I mean, it's not, I don't have a problem with the way it looks. I just have wondered if it's slanted, just one thread. If you just slant it one thread, if it would look a little better, maybe a little worse, I don't know. Because typically then at the midpoint on each side, you'd want to change the slant. So I don't know. I might play with it a little bit and see what it looks like. We'll see. I don't know.
Question that I had was whether you had or had any plans to make any changes, or whether you were going to be a purist and try and stitch it precisely as charted. And my understanding is that it was charted precisely as it was, as Sarah had actually originally stitched it. And it sounds like you are open to the idea of making changes.
Right. Well, and that was my intention at the beginning, was to stitch it as charted as Sarah designed it and stitched it. But I have to say that my mind starts to wander a little bit. Maybe I might fiddle here and there just to see what happens. So we'll see. I don't know. But I like the road stitch on that tree. And it was one of those things where, oh man, I got two of these balls left. Oh, I wish I'd have thought of that. That would have been really good because it was a nice look. In a silk thread, just a gentle little raise and a different texture. And it really was a nice, it was a good call by the person that did it. So, fun to play with, stuff to play with. And on a thing that size, there's all kinds of opportunities to play. So, yeah. And that reminds me, for those who are doing Sarah Brazier, as you know, a Mary Clayton sampler, Nicola is giving away the Mary Clayton sampler at the end of the Sarah Brazier Stitch Along on September 1. So anyone who has finished the Sarah Brazier goes into a drawing for that, the original sampler, and you also get a copy of the printed sampler that Nicola had printed up. That when you finish, she sends that to you automatically. When you post in the group that you finished in your picture, she will send that to you, and then you go into this drawing. And so this morning, I made up a list of everyone who has completed and is eligible for the drawing. So if you are in the Sarah Brazier Stitch Along, be sure and check in the announcements at the top to make sure if you've completed it, make sure your name's on there. And if you haven't completed it, then that tells me that you haven't posted in the Stitch Along your progress photos, what you're supposed to do, and your finished piece. And so you need to do that so you're eligible for the drawing, because only the people on that list will be in the drawing. So that list is up there. So if you're part of that Sarah Brazier thing, there's some 700 or 800 people. You definitely want to check that out. Make sure you're on the list if you finished, because you want to have a shot at that sampler. We have Pat from Irving, Texas, communicating with you.
Yes.
And so, tell about that.
Well, Pat is just a wonderful... She's a friend. She's been a loyal viewer of my Floss Tube videos for a long time. We started communicating through email quite some time back. And she recently, like a few days ago, you know, so funny, I read her first email and I had not yet listened to you and Vanna from last week. So I was a little confused where it was coming from. And then I listened to Vanna, to you and Vanna, and then I was surprised to get her second email where she hadn't even listened to you. She was talking about standing desks and how she stitches at a stand, or she stitches standing up, or she alternates between sitting and standing. And some of that comes from her experience of having a standing desk at work and how that works for her, and how she adapted the positions or the way she holds herself for her stitching. And I thought, this is really interesting and people need to hear about this. even the extra little piece, how she has something that she puts under her foot, that she, I interpreted that she alternates between, you know, she puts first the right foot on and then the left foot on. So it helps, I guess it helps with a back balancing issue. And it seems just like a wire basket, like that you could get at any kind of store, is, you know, something you could just put your foot on. I suppose you could even use some books. So there's at least one stitcher out there that certainly stitches for, I think she wrote for a few hours at a time.
Yeah. I've heard from three other people who either do or have tried standing. I think there's merit to it. Especially if you're able to stitch for 3 or 4 hours at a time, you know, if you have those, you know, the rare, like for me, the rare occasions where I actually have a block of time like that. But if you're able to do that and do that quite a bit, I think there's some real merit in figuring out how to stand up and stitch and either stand up for an hour, sit down for an hour, whatever it is. I think there's something to that. And I think people should explore that. They probably would. I wouldn't be surprised if people tried it. I wouldn't be surprised if we learned that people found they could stitch comfortably longer. It would not surprise me.
I was trying to think of, you know, I don't know. Part of what I love about my stitching setup is, I don't know, sort of like the coziness factor of being on my couch. And I usually start out cross-legged and then I adjust as time passes and so on. And I couldn't quite envision the comfy factor, not talking about being comfortable, but the comfy factor that's part of my stitching. If I were standing up, I don't know. Like but at the same time, I can also picture how I might do it, partially because of just sort of a layout I have at home here. And I just need to give it a try. Since listening to you guys, I just haven't had the chance to do it, but I will need to give it a try and clearly will need to report back to you. It's an interesting thought on, and it's all about, you know, what makes you comfortable and what is helpful to you and what gives you the stamina and the, you know, what, for me, I wouldn't want to do anything that takes away the enjoyment. I mean, let's be honest here. So,
well, but see, that's my point. I think that for some people, I'm not going to say it's a universal thing, but I think for some people, it may improve the enjoyment. And when Pat has something to put a foot up on, as Vaughn and I talked about, you know, that's the old bar trick with that rail down at the bottom. There's a reason that rail's there, because it makes you much more comfortable and you'll stay and drink more. And, you know, putting your foot up and then shifting to your other foot and you'll stay and drink more. I mean, that's a straight business move there that somebody figured out a long, long time ago. That allows you to stand and lean on that bar comfortably for a long, long time and drink more booze. And but the same principle, the physics apply to these kinds of things. And I would not be surprised. I think it's, I know I'm going to give it an honest effort here. I got an idea how I can get my stand high enough without a whole bunch of monkeying around that I can give it a run. But I think it's worth it. And especially if people have trouble ergonomically with their back or you know, the hips or whatever. I think, you know, to be able to stand up and sit down, there's probably some physical benefit there that's worth exploring. I really do. Oh, and for the record, Vanna's sound of a motorized stand-up desk going up and down was spot on.
Absolutely. Because yes. I sent you guys a video on that.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
So I have a desk that moves at where I teach that there's a lot of heavy reliance on the computer. And so there's a lot of, I stand and I move around the classroom and all of that, but I'm often going back over to the desk to see where we are in the lesson on the computer, just because the way the curriculum is. And that desk goes up and down. And when I heard you guys talking last week, I was like, you know what? Vaughn is really close on that sound. And I need to make sure that they hear this. So I've sent a little video to you guys to hear so that you could hear. Now, I have to believe there are different brands, different. There probably are different sounds that the different desks would make, but my desk sounds awfully close to what Vaughn was doing last week. So, yay, Vaughn!
Yeah, we're standardizing on that sound. That's the Vaughn stand up desk motor sound right there. We're just going to standardize on that. Yep. It was so funny because it really did sound just like Vaughn. It's like, okay.
Yep.
That was good. And then the other thing Pat had to offer, you know, we had a whole thing planned and we're not going to get to it. We're saving it for next time.
I was thinking that myself, and that's okay. That's right.
Yeah, folks, we planned ahead extensively for a big segment. And as so often happens, the big segment doesn't have time. So next time we're going to get right at it.
Okay.
Because we're saving it. Fortunately, it'll hold. But I was anxious to do it, but no time. So anyway, Pat from Irving, what is this here? Tell about that too.
So she was reading a book, and
This is the Pat from Irving segment of the show.
Yes, Absolutely. She had sent a quote that was just so perfect that I think it was important that she was thinking of you, Gary, and how many times you start the show referring to people who stab ground cloth. And I don't know. I don't really think of myself as a stabbing ground cloth kind of person. But that said, are there times where I absolutely love having my stitching to help work out the frustrations or working out the frustrations of life. So Pat was reading a biography of Joy Davidman, and I'm going to read from her email here, was the American who married famous author C.S. Lewis of the Chronicles of Narnia fame. And this, what I'm going to read to you is from the part of the book where it refers to the period where she, Joy, was diagnosed with a metastasized bone cancer and was recovering from surgery. The part that Pat found interesting is how she, Joy, referred to knitting with the use of the word stabbing. So the quote she says, this is from Joy's biography, as her physical strength soared and she regained full use of her right arm, she refused to relinquish hope that the bone might knit back together. By the end of May 1957, 9 months after her diagnosis, Joy needed no painkillers, not even aspirin, and the only medication she took was a single pill to help her sleep. If only she could walk 50 feet, hobble around a little in a leg brace, she could visit friends, go to the theater, take drives in the countryside with Jack, which was C.S. Lewis's nickname. For now, when he was in Cambridge, she bided her time tucked away in bed between Susie, Jack's shaggy standard poodle, and a cat named Tom, crocheting afghans and knitting socks. An amazing help with my spiritual difficulties when her spirits were low, she told a friend of Jack's. One can work off so many frustrations by stabbing away with a knitting needle. It's better to make pretty things, I find, than just useful things. And that's a quote from Joy, poet, seeker, and the woman who captivated C.S. Lewis by Abigail Santa Maria. The book is from 2015. So there you go. One can work off so many frustrations by stabbing away with a, I'm going to sort of erase the word knitting, and just by stabbing away with a needle. It is better to make pretty things, I find, than useful things.
There we go.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. Spot on.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Pat from Irving. Yes.
Yes. Thank you for finding that quote. I think it covers all stitchers. I think we all come to stitching from different perspectives and different times and different reasons why we might sit down or wherever with our needle and thread. But I think inevitably there are moments where we are turning to our needle and thread for a moment of comfort. And that comfort could be from a frustrating situation or a unhappy situation or something. And you do attack the fabric in a slightly different way than you might when you're just in a happy place. And for that reason alone, I think we all take a lot of comfort. So yeah, stab away. It's good for you.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right. We're going to quit there. Okay. Arlene Cohen works by ABC.com and, her FlossTube videos, one of my favorites. Just go to YouTube, look up Arlene Cohen. You'll find it. She's the only one. You'll be fine. It's easier that way. And then of course, Fiber Talk at WeTalkFiber.com. If you're interested in sponsoring a Fiber Talk show, let me know. There are opportunities. And also subscribe. I keep forgetting to do these things. If you want to be notified every time there's a new podcast up, go to any page on the WeTalkFiber.com website, and at the bottom, there's a place to put your name and email address, and then you get notified automatically. And I don't sell your email names because, as I've said many times, I barely have time to get the podcasts out, so chances of me taking time to sell them are slim and none, actually none. And if you're interested in sponsoring a show, fine. And then also, we have the FlossTube. Everything we do goes up on FlossTube, so you can subscribe there just as easily as you do the other FlossTube things and get us in the mix. And that's going to be it. Now, let's see. Sunday, Oh. Sunday, the guys are taking over. It's an all-guy podcast, Ronnie Rowe and me.
Ooh.
Yes. Ooh. There are no females involved. Yep. Get to talk to Ronnie Rowe. It was so much fun. I already did. It was so much fun to talk to him. What a terrific designer, really unique and creative in what he does, and a tremendous personality. And we had a great chat, Ronnie and I, in the boys club, in the Stitching Boys Club. So
yeah.
Yep. So that's Sunday. That's it. Arlene, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Gary.
Thanks to everybody for listening.
Take care.